just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 448. I am Lisa Sheps. I'm joined by Nick Alone.
Just me.
Just Nick. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. As always, we are streaming this show on KOOP.org. Make sure you stick by your dials. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh yeah.
There are no ice cubes.
It is Wednesday, January 17th, 2018. On the show today, we have the Hyde Park Theater and Script Works Frontera Fest. And later on, we'll be talking to someone from Broadway Across America's Finding Neverland. And of course, we'll have lively views of the world and discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Albuquerque, and Phoenix, Arizona. Don't go away.
What does he buy? Cheese strings.
Okay, I totally didn't bring that music underneath. That was, oops. Totally didn't bring that music underneath, so I hope people heard me.
I could hear you.
It's because of this new system, Nicole Shiro.
I know. I was kind of watching you going, making sure it was connected the way I
Yeah, never do that. When I'm not here, don't do that. Don't do what I just did.
Why?
Because I didn't bring the music under.
Oh, well, yeah, but I could use the iPod. You were using a different input.
Oh, yes, I'm using a program.
A different input than you normally would.
Yes.
Not the CD. It's
well, checking in with Nicole Shiro. How are you?
Cold.
It is. It's chilly. And so if you noticed, I had a theme of ice.
I got it.
Because of Ice Apocalypse.
It's a good thing.
2017.
Yes.
Or 2018.
Yeah.
That was There Are No Ice Cubes Down in Hell from a show called The Devil to Pay.
How do you get a drink?
Well, you don't use ice cubes. It's London because they don't use ice cubes there either.
Well, they do for a cocktail.
So anyway, we're missing Mr. Nick Mayo today.
I know.
He is at home nursing his wounds. And so our heart goes out to Nick and Michael and the whole family over there. They've had a rough few days.
They have had a rough few days.
So,
and he had a birthday, too.
Oh, it was his birthday. We should sing him the birthday song.
Ready?
Yeah. This is your birthday song. It isn't very long. Okay, next up on the thing. Is to thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful show.
Kim is always rocking it out in here.
He had people here. It was really fun.
Kim had a full house. Kim had more people than we did today.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah, we usually have a big group.
We do.
Group. And speaking of groups, let's introduce the people that are here with us.
The people in our neighborhood.
The people in the neighborhood. All a bunch of offstage and on the air veterans.
Yes.
I might add.
Yes.
And we have from Hyde Park Theater. I almost said Hyde Park Grill. Ken Webster. Oh, you know what? I'm going to turn on your microphone so people can actually hear you.
Good afternoon. I'm 6'3", 239 pounds.
That's excellent. Magical, too.
It is. There you are. Have you eaten at Hyde Park Grill?
Yeah.
I eat there often.
I think Hyde Park Theater should do a show at Hyde Park Grill.
Dun, dun.
That's a great idea.
Okay. And from Script Works, Christy Moore. Hi, Christy.
Howdy.
Howdy. And then Laura Freeman. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Excellent. Well, welcome to the show, everybody. So it is rather chilly.
It is.
It's chilly. It's chilly today. Hot tamale. We did have...
You know, if you dress properly, it's A-okay, though.
Oh, I have no problem with it. I say, you know, I do nothing but complain about the heat all summer. I have no right to complain about the cold, so I do not. I like it.
No, I still complain about the cold. I like the heat over the cold. But if you dress properly... It is what it is. I overheated. I had too many layers on today. I had to take some off.
Well, my problem is at my home is my heater is not made for like really cold weather.
No.
So my home does not get really toasty warm. But at night, I'm under a lot of blankets and I enjoy it. So we could go on about this all day long. How's everybody else's heat at home?
Very good.
Good. Okay, well, there you go. Thanks for being on the show. We had one show open on Broadway.
Oh my God, you made me laugh.
This is the Weather Channel. One show open on Broadway, which was John Lithgow's Stories by Heart. Anybody read anything about this?
I did. I read a review.
Did you read the New York Times review?
I did read the New York Times review.
Oddly enough, I read the reviews a few days ago, but I also, one of the podcasts I listened to right after it opened, I don't know what reviews this guy was talking about, but he seemed to think that the Times panned it, and it absolutely did not. It was a love letter to it. So I don't know. And it was, who did it? Jesse Green at the time. So they liked it. So this show is John Lithgow reading.
So I was about to say, I thought I skimmed over that, and I'm like, I don't remember it being a pan.
No, so, not a pan at all.
No, yeah, no, it was good.
So he, basically, it's a two-act, one-man show that he reads two short stories. One, Ring Lardner's Haircut from 1925, and the second is Woodhouse, PG. Oh, my God. Uncle Fred Flits By.
And say that again?
Is Uncle Fred Flits By.
Isn't that fun to say
that three times.
Does he read it?
I don't think he reads it. I think he performs them. Yeah. And it's all interlaced with stories of his own upbringing by his father, who was actually a theater person, too, which I did not know. Mm-hmm. Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I knew that. I saw him.
You said that in such a way that I should have known.
No, I was trying to remember if I knew it before I read that review, but I think I did know it before I read that review.
He's talked about it once or twice, by the way.
What did I say?
Lithgow. It's Lithgow.
Oh, it's Lithgow, not Lithgow. Yeah. I always call him Lithgow.
Like Rainbow.
Go, go.
Who knew?
Go.
Who knew? I've got a very quick John Lithgow story. It's going to be hard to change. Because I've been saying it that way for a long time. When he was getting ready to go on the Tonys, when he was up for M. Butterfly, a friend of mine was a dancer in the Tonys show, and she was backstage just talking to him, and somebody was talking about M. Butterfly, and she said, "Yeah, I hear that show's pretty good. Have you seen it?"
And what did he say?
Yeah. For those that don't know John Lithgow, I believe he won the Tony that year. He may not have for *M. Butterfly*, which just had a revival last year that did not do as well.
No. Julie Taymor.
Yeah, I know. I was rooting for her too. I wanted it to. I think she needs another hit because she's not very talented.
She's been the.
No, she needs to work on it.
So anyway, there's Peachy Woodhouse. In case you were wondering, the reviews were universally pretty good. Jesse Green said the stories are superb, outlandish in very different ways, hair raising, and it's sort of interesting. The first story, Haircut, is sort of a sinister story where this good old boy is talking about the town they live in, sort of ragging on the other people in town, but it all circles back to he's just as guilty as everybody else.
Yeah, I don't know why I've read that short story. There was some...
I didn't read it, but I'm going to now.
Yeah, it was like 20-something years ago, and there was it came up in a conversation, and I remember I picked it up, and I don't remember all of it, but I remember when I was reading this, I'm like, I don't think that... If I remember correctly, it's not really this happy... Peace. Mm-hmm.
No, but Uncle Fred Flits By is. He describes it as utter nonsense, a tightly plotted farce made of thin air. Also difficult to say.
Mm. And do.
And do. but it's interesting. So they talk about the interlacing the story of his father's relationship in him and how difficult and fraught that was in a lot of ways, but his father read these two stories to him as he was young, and it's sort of it's very poignant in the last few years of his father's life. His John Lithgow would read those stories to his father on his deathbed. I thought that was very, very sweet.
It is cool.
Yeah.
So let's see who else said in New York One, Roma Torre said, "While there's nothing wrong with the storytelling on that big Broadway stage, it's the stories themselves that get a little lost in the translation." So that was a little bit of a negative one, but that was about as negative as it got. Hollywood Reporter said, "It's like a meal that leaves you feeling stuffed while wanting more."
Cool.
And The Rap, which I'm not familiar with this one, The Rap, Tom Geyer said, but this modest celebration of the joys of storytelling is at its heart a chamber piece and feels woefully, oh, this is not a good one either, feels woefully out of place in a Broadway theater. So,
which theater is he at? I don't remember that.
He is at, stand by, I don't remember that either. I want to say, because I know now he's at the American Airlines Theater.
It's a pretty good size. It's large.
Yeah. I was about large to house. Say it's so.
Well, but one of the things that it says in, and this is, I believe, a roundabout production. This is the kind of thing that actually, I'm going to read it verbatim. Because he says, I have to admit, I didn't expect to enjoy such an old-fashioned show. Delight, illumination, and uplift felt like debased currencies in 2018, purchasing nothing. Furthermore, I knew that Mr. Lithgow had been performing Stories of the Heart for 10 years, a one-act version, first being staged 2008 at Lincoln Center. Since then, he has brought it to some 35 cities. He was saying that this is the kinds of things that you stuff into a season when you have an opening. But he didn't feel that way at the end of the review, so excellent. Hmm. I would go see it.
Oh, I would.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think, Laura?
I love short stories and storytelling.
Me too. Love storytelling too. I was just having this conversation with someone yesterday who was not as fond of storytelling as I am, but I love it. Okay. Do you do storytelling as well, Laura?
Well, I've written scripts and performed in puppet shows for.
Well, that's close.
So we're telling a story.
And one-woman shows.
And one-woman shows.
On the stage.
On stage.
On the stage. So Meteor Shower is closing Sunday.
That was pretty quick.
Yeah. So it's closing.
Is that the Steve Martin one?
That's the Steve Martin one with Amy. I was about to say Amy Sedaris, but it's
Laura Benanti.
Amy Schumer and Laura Benanti. Yeah. And you pronounced her last name properly. Thank you.
You're
many
welcome.
People, many people say Bonanti.
Oh, I'm a Broadway fan. What
You're
can
right.
I say?
Yeah. So there's an article about the I think it's the Asian. There's a nonprofit that for Asian performers that does a diversity study each year, and the 2015-2016 season report just came out, and it is the most diverse. Season 2015-16 since whenever for a long, long time at 35%. I'm going by memory right now because I'm looking for the 36% of Broadway roles going to minority actors, which would be people of color, Asian, differently abled, and that was in large part to Spring Awakening, Hamilton. What was the other? Color Purple.
Color Purple Revival opened then. Mm-hmm.
The organization that does this is the Asian American Performers Coalition. And they had a lot of, they were talking about the shows and non-traditional casting. They basically, the bottom line said that the best way to create a diverse environment is not necessarily to bring in shows that highlight people of diverse nature, but to have non-traditional casting, mm-hmm. which I think is a great thing to say. The straight plays did not fare as well as the musicals when it comes to diversity. There's a 85% Caucasian in straight plays versus 57 in musicals. And this is looking at theater, both Broadway and off-Broadway.
Wonder, it's hard, I can't remember all the shows that were on that season.
Color Purple, Eclipsed, Shuffle Along, Gin Game, The Crucible, both of those had non-traditional casting. Mm-hmm. I believe Allegiance was that year as well.
Was it that
that's
year?
True.
Mm-hmm. But there was a 5% drop in Asian actors, but mainly because King and I closed.
Right. And so did Allegiance.
And so I was like, and Allegiance.
Well, no, I think Allegiance was in this season.
It carried over.
King and I was not in this season.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So, but I think it's interesting. I think it's great. And they have a hashtag, or they sparked the hashtag, Tony's So Diverse. And so hopefully we'll keep going, yeah?
Yeah.
And we here in Austin should be doing the same thing, right?
We should.
All of us leaders here in the room? Yeah. Okay.
Si, senorita.
Good. And there's a picture of David Diggs, amongst other people. Y'all probably know who all these names are. I'm terrible with names. I love David Diggs.
Cynthia Erivo.
That's Cynthia Erivo.
Leslie Odom Jr.
And
Renee Lee Scoldsberry. Texan.
Oh,
is she? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Where's she from?
Houston area, I believe. She won a Texas Medal of Honor, Texas Medal of the Arts last year.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize.
She was honored.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, speaking of Leslie Odom Jr., he's singing the Star Spangled Banner at the Super Bowl.
No, America the Beautiful.
That's what I mean.
Oh, it says sing, America the Beautiful. Very good. You know everything, America the Beautiful.
Okay, it's football. and it's Broadway.
Other people
so it's
that have sung.
Definitely going to know what's going on.
America the Beautiful are Vicky Carr, Ray Charles. I don't know who that is. Mary J. Blige.
Ray Charles.
I know who he is. Mark Anthony. Saw him in concert. Probably the best concert I've ever seen in my life,
He's,
by the way.
Yeah.
Queen Latifah, Leah Michelle, Jennifer Hudson. All Broadway folks. Pink is going to perform the national anthem. I didn't realize that Pink is P exclamation point
and K. Yeah, she's just awesome sauce. I
did
love
you know that,
Ken?
I didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I couldn't tell you anything that she has sung, Pink. Just saying.
We need to make you a Pink fan. She's a good lady. She has a lot of great messages and uses her celebrity for good stuff. Yeah, Pink
like
rocks.
This. So last week around this time, Greg Boyd announced his early retirement from the Houston's Alley Theater. Speculation is the right word. It was pretty well known that he was not really leaving completely voluntarily, but under a cloud. And indeed, there was an article that sort of spelled that out. But interestingly enough, it isn't sexual harassment. It's just harassment in general. He was a big bully of a person, or he is a big bully of a person, evidently. Anybody having experience with him, Gregory Boyd?
No, I read about this recently, but I've never worked there.
He did some inappropriate things like pinching people's butts, but mostly he just created a very hostile workplace. But he was there for a lot of years,
I think.
Yeah, I think he started in the 90s, somewhere in here it says.
Mm-hmm. Almost 30 years, pretty close. I want to say 28. I think that's 28, 29.
Yeah, so he offered a general apology at a staff meeting saying, quote, "I recognize and I hope all of you do too that criticism in our business is a good thing. It's how we deliver the criticism that we need to work on. I know I need to get better on this point. I can't say I'm going to be 100% successful, but I think it's time to make the best effort." Evidently, he didn't. But evidently, also, it's not just him. It's all of the people. The one woman that filed the major complaint went to the stage manager saying, "I can't deal with this formal complaint with the stage manager," and it went nowhere. And finally, after 2 years of this, she.
Why didn't somebody go through equity?
I'm assuming they did. I'll have to go back and look at this, but equity doesn't have a lot of. Clout either along those lines. I mean, they tend to use money as a thing. So, you know, buck up and deal with it, and we'll get you more money is usually their answer, right?
Yeah.
So there will be a link to the article, which is from the Houston Chronicle, at offstageonair.com if you want to read the whole thing. But it was more than a dozen current and former Alley Theater employees filed the complaint. So
it's a bummer. Alley does good work. There are good people that work there. It's a bummer for the theater community. It's a bummer even more that it takes away from the rebuilding that needs to be done in the theater community in Houston.
Which is going to make it harder to find somebody for that job, I would think. They're going to have to raise a ton of money again after they just did raise a ton of money.
Well, it's interesting because I also read another article that not only is it going to be hard to specifically fill that job because of the Harvey and stuff, but there are so many openings for artistic directors around the United States right now that they're having a problem building those positions in the first place. And then you put a theater of this magnitude that is, you know, Tony Award winning and then has the Harvey situation and all these other elements to it. And so it'll be interesting, but
it's difficult, but I am really, really happy that this stuff is going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's about time, and it should never have gotten to this point.
Mm-mm.
Ever. So there it is. But I see
it's pretty unusual.
Four of us
though.
Can get our resumes together and maybe get an artistic director job somewhere.
It's pretty unusual, though, for somebody to be encouraged to leave, I guess, for just being a general harassment instead of something specifically sexual.
Well, that
there's
is
a lot of people.
That's
who
something
are
I started to think about. I can point to many directors that I worked with in my days that were very tough, mm-hmm. if you will, and yeah. said some pretty unfeeling, unthinking things.
And the Ali, when they announced he was leaving, did not say it was because of this. This came out a few days later, yeah. and these were people.
Right.
You know, the Ali said their statement was, he's retiring 2 days. He was going to retire before Harvey anyway. He stayed on for other stuff. And they haven't addressed, oh, yes, that is or isn't. So, and I have not seen... There was one other news that was a piece that was investigative. It was on Eyewitness News, and it was out like 2 days before this Chronicle piece over the Friday or Saturday that they had talked to a few employees. It was pretty much the same one, but I haven't seen a whole bunch of. I've heard things, but I, yeah.
right,
you know,
right.
I'm not going to go on.
The organization order, so. Has been silent.
Right. Okay.
So even that apology that I read was taken from a transcript of a board, of a private board meeting.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So none of
I don't know
they have
the
not
whole.
Officially responded. I don't think. I want to get moving because I do want to talk about one thing before we finish because I've been trying. Anyway.
It's the Nicole section. Let's hear all
Nicole
about
section.
Me.
Well, let's do hear all about you. There was a very interesting theater in the very interesting article in the American Theater Magazine talking about directing. And I thought this was a really good opportunity to talk about this since we're heavy on directors in this room right now. Talking about the education of directors and how, and I didn't realize this, there are very few undergraduate programs for directors. So usually a director will take a regular theater course, but this sort of lays out seven or so very good, in their opinion, MFA courses for directors. And it was interesting to read this because they all are very different and have different focuses. They take very few people, like usually one or two a year. In one case, I think it's two every 3 years.
It really is like a handful here in the States, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Well, there's actually a lot here. So I'll just gonna go through a few of them here. Virginia Tech is the first one, but they all have a bend. Virginia Tech has a particular bend on ensemble-based theater and devised work. Mm-hmm. They also have, not only do you do theater, but you do theater as a public, where did it go? It's not just theater, but it's a theater, fine arts in directing and public dialogue. So they have a whole
interesting
community aspect yeah. to it mm-hmm. where they learn, and I love this, they learn that theater as a public forum essential for social health, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Catholic University of America in D.C., never heard of it, but it's
my uncle went there.
Barbara
my
Chisholm
cousin
went there.
Went there. Bar-
oh,
yeah.
cool.
Well, Abe Riebel went there, I think,
really?
And his family, because we were talking about Catholic Union.
Well,
that basilica is stunning. That's where my cousin met Mother Teresa.
They have an MFA program that has which I like this, they have a sister program with playwriting. So the MFA and playwriting work really hand-in-hand with the MFA and directing. I think that rocks.
Like
that
you too.
Is, yeah, that's cool.
Trinity Repertory Company in Providence, Rhode Island, Brown University. They take two directing students every 3 years. That's the one. And it's a very interesting course there. And we're going to talk about Trinity Repertory in just a second. But I will just go down. So they talk about California Institute of the Arts, Yale University, University of South Dakota, Brooklyn College, Northwestern, Penn State, and this little gem. I hope I'm pronouncing this properly. Texas State University.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it made this article, which I think is great. I'm going to read it. It's just a paragraph so that you can see what people are writing about our hometown university. Texas State University in San Marcos has an MFA program in directing with unique specializations, including musical theater, new play development, and theater history dramaturgy. So MFA candidates can choose the work that specifically interests them. The program is only open to two students a year. I added the only because I think it should be there. With each student getting a chance to direct 5 full-length productions, one-act plays, stage readings, short scenes, and class projects. So I just think that that's really cool that we made that. I was very happy to do that. They also have a partnership with the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Yes.
Doing work together.
Texas State does?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I didn't know that.
Did you know that?
I did know that.
You said yes, as if you did.
I saw something on that recently, and I was like,
Well, the last thing I want to talk about is, and maybe people know more than I do, but we talked about focusing on regional theaters around the country. And coincidentally, before I read that article, I had chosen Trinity Repertory in
Rhode Island,
in Providence, and it is a Lort B theater.
I believe
And so their mission is, or Trinity Rep's mission is to reinvent the public square with dramatic art that stimulates, educates, and engages our diverse community in a continuing dialogue. They're founded in 1963 when the first artistic director is Adrian Hall. Does anybody know who he is?
Yeah, he was at Dallas Theater Center.
Texan,
quite a while.
So we always come back to Texas. So their first production was The Hostage by Brendan Behan. They got substantial funds from the National Endowment of Arts in 1966, just 3 years after their...
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not just a little jealous.
No, yeah.
So they've got a really... incredible website with a lot of stuff on it.
Oscar Eustace,
the fourth artistic director, 1994. And they started their association with Brown University in 2001. So it seems like an incredible. Has anybody seen anything there or know anything?
Yes, I have, but I couldn't even remember. My grandmother and all my family lived in Rhode Island for years, and I spent a lot of time there.
Yeah, very different from Pawtucket.
I watched the Independence Man be put on the top of the Capitol building in Providence. It was too windy one day. They had to abort the mission. We had to come back the next day.
Excellent. So for extra credit, who wants to guess their annual budget? Over and under.
Well,
it's going to make me jealous, whatever it is.
I'm going to say it's probably more than Zach's.
I'm going to go.
6 million?
No, it's got to be more than that. I'm going to say 23.
23 million? Laura?
Oh, yeah. Probably is more than that.
Ken?
17.3 million.
Well, I'm going to say that.
6.
That Christy won. Coming closest without going over.
Oh, you won the showcase showdown.
$9.1 million.
$9.1 million.
Yeah. And I just love their website, so I'm just going to go on record as saying that. So we got to take a little break.
Providence is a cool city.
Yes, I've been there. I've never been there.
It's been built up and redone a lot, and there's a lot of... It's a really cool city.
Excellent. We do have to take a break. I do have to mention also that Actors Equity, this is swing day. And there is I forgot the hashtag, something about swing. But we've talked about swings here on this program, and swings are very important. So in honor of swings, we'll listen to Swing.
Swing. Dig the message.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro. We are missing Mr. Nick Mayo.
No mayo. Hold it today.
No mayo. We're going to hold it. So I should say that song, Swing, was from Wonderful Town.
I love that.
And that was a London cast record. No, it was
That sounded like Rosalind Russell.
It was. It was the Broadway cast. I was vacillating between playing the London cast or the Broadway cast, and I ended up
vacillating. A good word to use today, Lisa.
So we're gonna jump right into Hyde Park Theater.
Let's do it.
Script Works, talking about Frontera Fest. We will reintroduce Mr. Ken Webster, the artistic director of Hyde Park Theater.
Good afternoon.
And Christy Moore, the executive director of Script Works. What's your
executive
title?
Artistic director.
Executive artistic director of Script Works. And Laura Freeman, the creative director of Laura Freeman.
That is right.
Amen.
I like that.
That's about all I can handle.
And Laura Freeman, I should say, is doing is one of the Frontera Fest productions, and her show is entitled Mother Tree.
That's
and,
correct.
And I love that. With it, oddly enough, that was my sorority name in college.
I was waiting for it.
Yeah, so I had to come
in sometime. Like, I hadn't heard it yet. So
Ken or Christy, tell us about Frontera Fest. And everybody really should know about Frontera Fest.
We'll go back and forth. But this is the 25th anniversary of Frontera Fest. It was started by Vicky Boone, Jason Phelps, and Annie Sweet. And Scriptworks and Hyperc Theater started working together on the festival in 2002. And there are lots of different components in Frontera Fest, aren't there, Christy?
There sure are, Ken.
They've done this before.
The heart right there of, we do this every night. The heart of Frontera Fest is the Short Fringe, which was the thing that started it all. And that is a five-week-long adventure in a short performance for pieces 25 minutes or less. There are five shows a night. There's a competitive feature to the Short Fringe. So we have panelists that come and see all the shows Tuesday through Friday, different panelists, different weeks. And then so we have the best of week on every Saturday. And then the final week of the festival is best of fest. And the audience also votes every night and is part of that decision-making process, so to speak.
So I have to say that last year, of course, I've been to Frontera Fest Short Fringe before, but last year I was honored enough to be a judge for one of the weeks.
Panelist, we call them.
Panelist. I like to call myself a judge.
That is a Vicky Boone thing. She was like, don't call them judges, and I always do what Vicky Boone tells me.
Well, let me just say this. I was very judgy. I was a panelist.
You need to get
panely. But what was fun was to watch the two of you on stage, and it was fun to watch the repertoire the change ever so slightly each night, but basically the same, and it was quite fun.
Well,
so
thank you.
You guys should take that on the road.
We did. They did not love us last night as much as they often do.
Oh,
they were a little reserved.
Which Ken is always sure to point out. Really, you don't like our stale jokes? What's wrong with you?
How dare you? This is my best dad joke. But you just don't only have the Short Fringe,
right? So we also this year we have Bring Your Own Venue. We have two Bring Your Own Venue shows: Amparo Garcia Crow's Strip, mm-hmm. and Notario.
Tig Notaro.
Not close. No, I don't.
I thought you had some in your.
Yeah.
We could look
yes,
it up.
Yes, they're out there. You're right.
So,
Heidi.
A Heidi musical.
Heidi musical.
A Heidi musical.
At Red River Church.
At Red River Church. And where is Amparo?
Amparo's is at the Austin Film Society
performance space.
Regardless,
they can find that all at HydeParkTheater.org.
HydeParkTheater.org.
Yeah, all the schedules and all the descriptions of all the various types of shows are on the website.
Yeah. And then we also have Mi Casa Es Su Teatro.
Yes, and we were just talking about that before we went on the air.
Performances in people's homes and other unusual locales. Over the last few years, because it's so more challenging to get around Austin, we've concentrated in a neighborhood every year. So this year it's going to be around South Austin. I mean, so South Congress. Hello.
What's the why do you need to concentrate in an area? As an audience member, do I just go to one or do I go to multiples?
It's like a day long thing. So usually performance starts around 11. And we end up with a wrap party around 5:30 or 6.
Oh, so I'm going to be going to multiple
places today.
So
you're going to multiple venues, yeah. And in the early days, you could drive across Austin in 15, 20 minutes.
Nope.
And have, you know, but you would spend all day in the car.
See, well,
and
the
not
challenge
enough performance.
Here is this is for next year. And this idea is free.
All right, bring it.
So you have South Austin venues and North Austin venues and a bus venue.
Mm.
That's a great idea. We have had walking tours as part of it, so that the movement from place to place was also performance oriented.
So for this year, define South Austin. Is it
South Congress? I misspoke.
Oh, South Congress. Okay.
Somewhere around there. I mean, we're still. If anybody has a house around South Congress that they would like to have a performance in, we're still taking. We're looking for houses.
Still looking.
Yeah.
And if people wanted to do that, where would they go?
They could go to FronteraFest@HydeParkTheater.org, which would be my email.
Yeah, FronteraFest@HydeParkTheater.org. But I'm assuming that's also a link on HydeParkTheater.org.
It is indeed. If you go to the staff page, you can reach me there.
Awesome. And Laura, you are a performer, and you are doing your show as one of the Short Fringe pieces, yes?
That's correct.
Tell us about Mother Tree.
Well, this is my third time performing in Short Fringe, and I love it. It's somebody dared me to do it years ago. And this year, I've actually joined Scriptworks and Hyde Park Theater because Scriptworks always does a writing prompt, 30, 60, 90, where they send you writing prompts every day, and you're supposed to write a short scene.
I need that.
And I took a scene, I fell in love with it and have turned it into Mother Tree, which is pretty autobiographical.
And is it?
That's awesome.
This is a two-person piece. Did I hear this?
Actually, there will be four performers. Myself.
What I said was, this is a four-person piece.
And you were right, Lisa.
Four-person piece. So carry on. I'm sorry to have interrupted.
Myself, Amy Zivin, and then who I met during Wassail, if you know about that fun theater event in Austin. And
I
then Ben Johnston and Melanie Schopper are going to join me. And I usually do one woman shows, so this is a big deal for me.
Wow.
Yeah, that's not just like one extra, but that's three extra people. That's like
lots of moving parts.
Well, how is that for you? Because when you're doing your one person show and you are basically controlling every aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to let go a little bit of that control when you have other people in there, yes? How's that for you?
I'm loving it because they're bringing in fresh ideas and they're really taking the work seriously. It's a work really close to my heart. It's dealing with my mother's death. And so they're just bringing in elements to it that I wouldn't have thought of. I'm dance and movement and costuming. And so I'm super excited.
Wonderful. And I have a feeling, and I'm not quite sure where I get this because it's not apparent from the title, that music is involved somehow.
Well, I started out as a songwriter, and
you have a guitar.
And I have a guitar
right
sitting in my lap.
Just so the listeners know, she's sitting here with a guitar.
Do you want to give us a little example of what you're going to be doing with that guitar?
Sure.
Sure. You need to set it up in any way?
Can you hear the guitar?
I can.
Okay, then we're set. Why can't you tell me why violets are blue, but roses always make me cry? Why can't you tell me what I'm supposed to do, even though I get mad when you try? And I'll keep wishing that the words start making sense. And I'll keep looking out my eyes open up wide, because I'm certain that there's been some slight mistake. They would have never meant to leave me there behind when the train pulled away from the station.
That was lovely. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
That was lovely.
That was kind of awesome. I'm sorry you ended it. I wanted more.
I know. I was not going to turn my microphone back on until you started
playing.
So that will be in this piece, Mother Tree?
Yes.
So folks, we'll see that and see how it works in context to the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love it. I love it. It's
and
beautiful.
Your date is February 6th, is that right?
January 30th.
That was close.
January 30th.
Well, so it's only 4 weeks to remember.
Let's do a quick little exercise. Let's say I'm a person. I want
to
see Laura
I'll
Freeman's
agree to that.
Show. Well, no, many people will disagree with you on that one. Let's say I wanted to see Laura Freeman's show, but I don't know when it is. How do I navigate that through the website? Wait, let me, there, now do it.
At the Hyde Park Theater website, there are show descriptions for each night, and if you look through there, you'll...
So I scroll down until I see Laura's name, uh-huh. And I go, aha, that's the ticket I want. And while I'm at it, I like three
what
or four other
say?
Things I saw. I say, aha, that is the ticket I want. And I probably saw three or four other things that I might want to be interested in seeing, too.
Oh, yes, and you can...
At least.
Yeah. Yes. There's just so many shows. That's the place to go. Hyde Park Theater website. 80 different short pieces to bring your own venues. And there's going to be several of the Mikasa shows.
Yeah, that's that sounds exciting. I want to do
love
a I wish I lived in 78704. I would do a Mikasa show. My show, my blind dog Sophie has been itching to get on the stage.
Well,
we might have some short French slots opening up. That's, that happens.
Sophie could easily do a 20-minute piece.
She does like center stage.
She does. Well, that's great. And one of the things that you've always said every time you've come on this show is like, if you don't like what you see, just wait a little while.
Right. Which is 25 minute or less. So some of them are much less.
There's some 6-minute shows, 12-minute shows, 20-minute shows.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the French. And this is the 25th year. Are you doing anything special for 25?
We're having an opening weekend party. We always do that, but it'll be even more fun this year.
Oh, yay.
Opening weekend party this Saturday after the Saturday performance, and a closing weekend party the final night, February 17th.
And if I wanted to come to that Saturday night party, do I have to have seen the shows on Saturday night to participate in the party?
We encourage it.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know. But I might have gone every other night and just not been able to get there.
And there'll be participants from that night and previous.
We encourage all the participants to come and hang out too. So it's a great way to meet people.
Terrible of you to make people go to a party.
You want people to celebrate?
You know, we don't force anything.
That's just awful. So Frontera Fest is going on right now. It opened last night.
It did.
And how long do you go?
February 17th.
February 17th, which means my notes are wrong.
January 16th through February 17th.
I see there.
Five glorious weeks.
The week of Valentine's, Lisa.
Where can folks go to get more information once again?
The Hyde Park website, hydeparktheater.org.
And would they also see it at the ScriptWorks website as well?
We focus more on ScriptWorks members that are part of it. But there's a link to Hyde Park.
And what is ScriptWorks? URL?
We have, it is scriptworks.org.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. You were going to say something.
Well, I was just going to say, but even before ScriptWorks became a co-producer, we commissioned pieces for the festival that run every Wednesday, and we focus on that, but we have a ton of ScriptWorks members involved in the festival overall.
Indeed you do. And Laura, other than Frontera Fest, I'm assuming do you have a website or something specifically for you that you can point people to?
Well, because I have multiple personalities. I have, there's the Luna Tart website.
We love Luna Tart.
All things Luna. And then for my children's music, there's heylollymusic.com. And I guess Laura Freeman just gets a Facebook page.
So all things Luna, allthingsluna.com?
No, it's lunatart.com.
Lunatart.com and heylollymusic.com.
Mm-hmm.
Well, awesome. Thank you guys for being on the show. And
thank you.
Hopefully all or either some of you can stick around and join us backstage.
Sure.
That would be groovy. Okay, you know what? Oh, the one thing I forgot to do.
What?
And I'm going to go ahead and do it.
The magic number you chose earlier.
Before we started, I had Laura choose a number between 2 and 54. Do you remember what you chose, Laura?
47.
Is that 47? Right? Let me see if I can get to
correct.
It.
That was the number you said earlier.
You win.
Okay, it took me just a while to get it into the magic box here, and here it is. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Billy Strick.
Comedy Sports Austin.
Hi, I'm Holland Taylor.
This is Jason Wynn.
We're the Bastard Jersey Boys.
I'm Jim Caruso.
Hi, I'm Lucy Arnaz.
We're the Gigawatts Burlesque.
This is Martin Burke.
Hi, I'm Carissa Cameron.
And we're the Radio City Rockettes.
And you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP.
And you
on KOOP.
And you
on KOOP.
And you.
Okay, well, it clearly didn't want us to hear the whole thing.
Yes. Live show.
Yeah. That was crazy.
That is our mashup. So we're going to take a little break.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
We haven't heard that in a while. Good.
We haven't. I'm going to have to make a new CD anyway to help all that. So the song I'm going to play coming out of this, I was trying to figure out what to do. And so fringe was my lookup word that I used to find something to go out. And this is from Con.
I was like, please
musical.
Don't tell me it was from Oklahoma.
No, it's from Con. Oh, I almost went there, by the way.
I would have killed you.
I laughed when that came up.
Con?
Con as in the wrath
as
of
As in the
Con.
Wrath of Con, Ricardo
oh my
Montalban.
God, the
here it is.
Who knew?
When I was about to conquer the world.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP and KOOP.org. I'm Lisa Sheps.
And I'm Nicole Solo.
No
Mayo.
No Nick Mayo.
Josh Hero.
just those people. We have been talking to Ken Webster, Christy Moore, and Laura Freeman. And now we're going to switch gears. And, you know, Finding Neverland, the Broadway show, is on tour and is playing right now at Bass Concert Hall.
Peter Pan.
And I would have been able to talk more about it because I was planning on going to see it last night, but it was canceled because of Ice Apocalypse.
Oh, it was.
The freeze hit Neverland.
Really? Frontier Fest went on, I just want to say.
Well, and
I'm sure UT was close, so they couldn't do it.
Patty Neftit and I spoke, and I forgot what she said, but I said it should go on. And I called you wimps if you didn't. So I'm proud of you for doing it.
Thank God we missed that. We escaped that fate.
Anyway, I sat down with Karen Murphy. I actually didn't sit down. Well, I might have sat down
you
with her.
Were on,
I was
you
definitely
were sitting.
Sitting down. It was on the phone. Karen Murphy, who plays, I can't even pronounce the character name, Madame Zdolzikotowalwaza. Anyway, in Finding Neverland. And let's just listen to that conversation, shall we?
Let's.
Hey, everybody. I'm on the phone here with Karen Murphy, who's in the touring production of Finding Neverland that is coming here to the Bass Concert Hall. Karen, welcome to Offstage and on the Air.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We are so happy to have you. You are right now on the road. You're somewhere in the wilds of Florida, are you not?
I'm in Palm Beach.
Palm Beach. What what venue are you playing there?
We're at the lovely Kravis Center.
Yeah, I love that place.
Yeah, it's terrific.
I actually spent, not on purpose, the millennium at Palm Beach. Millennium Day.
Story.
January 1st, 2000, in Palm Beach. I won't go into it, but it has to do with the Bahamas and a broken airplane.
Okay, that's a story you can tell for a long time.
Exactly, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about you and Finding Neverland.
Well, it's not a secret in the industry that Finding Neverland is an enormous hit on the road. It played about a year and a half on Broadway. It was enjoyed, but I think got edged out by some other shows.
Yep.
And here on the road, it's as if we are the show people have been waiting for.
Well,
we are a family-friendly show, and I make that distinction because we're not a kids' show. We're a family-friendly show. We have everything someone wants when they go to the theater. We have a fabulous story. Who doesn't know something about Peter Pan? We have four very talented kids. We have a dog. We have beautiful sets. And an orchestra, and people just are coming en masse, often three generations. I love seeing that. And we have such a good feeling presenting this as we go all across America.
Yeah, so this is the story of J.M. Barrie, right?
Correct.
And how he was inspired to write Peter Pan.
Correct.
That's awful. And what a great story to tell. And you're right. Everybody knows it. And it's got, must have a great deal of popular appeal.
It's what's not to like. We've got it all. Very tuneful, wonderful choreography, tremendous talent, full of what are termed triple threats.
We know all about triple threats on this show. We talk about them quite, We talk about them quite often.
Okay, well, we've got them.
Well, as a matter of fact, just as a quick sideline, we talk about, you know, here in Austin, we have a little school called the University of Texas, which just stopped their musical theater program. And I think that's just a crime because it really lessens people's opportunities once they get to New York. If you're not a triple threat, you have much less chances.
What motivated them to stop the program?
Money. Money, it's crazy. So write your congressman.
Well, I think there's a lot that goes on the community level in Austin. I happen to know there's a lot of talent there, and people will just have to dig deeper, but they'll be able to get their training.
But you, here in Finding Neverland, have a cast filled of triple threats. Triple threats, for those that don't know it, are people who can act, sing, and dance equally as wonderfully.
Yeah.
So what is, if I know the story of Peter Pan, or I've seen the movie Finding Neverland, do I basically know the story? Why do I want to come see the show?
Yeah, I mean, we because there's nothing that replicates sitting in the dark and the lights going down and you are told a story and your imagination is engaged. It's as old as the caveman telling stories around the campfire. And it will always have that power. And we are highlighting the story with music and lyrics and choreography.
Right, and you can't go wrong with that. And directed by the incomparable Diane Paulus.
Indeed. Yeah. Girl.
How
of the moment.
How incredible was it to work with her?
I thought to work with her not full time as some of the cast members
right.
did. I joined the show a year ago this past Tuesday.
Oh.
January 2nd was
Mazel
my birthday.
Tov.
So
happy
I
anniversary.
Did not rehearse with the cast as the tour was being assembled. But I have worked with her a couple of times as she comes out to maintain the show. And she's very specific and very clear and a very respectful director. It's a pleasure.
Right. And talk about the role that you play.
I am Mrs. DeMaurier. I was played by Julie Christie in the movie. This is 1903.
And Carol Lee Carmelo on Broadway, right?
Correct. It's 1903. Victorian London is in full bloom with its emphasis on manners and proprieties. And I am most particular about observing all of those. And my daughter falls into this friendship with a married man.
Oh,
that's
heavens.
Just not done. So there is the conflict that every good drama needs. And we have a mother-daughter scene that most mothers and daughters can relate to. And eventually I turn a corner and end up in a position of detente with Mr. Barry. And it's a lovely part. I get to wear fabulous costumes. I wear a gown when I make my entrance in Act One. Every time I get into that costume, I just say, aren't you lucky? You get to play dress up and somebody's paying you. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, that is wonderful. And the costume design, I cannot pronounce this person's name. Sutriat Larlarb? It looks like Sutriat Larlarb, so I'm going to go with that.
Stunning. Stunning.
Thank you so much. And you've got quite a pedigree yourself. You've done a lot of stuff. But one of the things you did was the tour of Mary Poppins. Were you here in Austin with the tour when it came through?
No, I played Dallas.
You played Dallas. Well, bummer, then
Dallas.
I didn't get to see you.
There were two tours of Mary Poppins out. I was with the second tour.
Uh-huh. I was, that was one. Was that a fun show to do?
Oh, tremendously. Tremendously. And I played dual roles, Bird Woman in Act One and Miss Andrew in Act Two. And it's fairly well known, but worth mentioning, Feed the Birds. The song was Walt Disney's favorite song.
It is such a beautiful song.
Yeah.
And as a child, I have to say I hated that part of the show, the movie. But as an adult, I lavish upon it.
Yes, I saw it in the movie theater as well.
Yeah.
My goodness.
That was the first movie I ever saw. I am dating myself.
We won't tell.
Yeah, thank you. So have you been to Austin before?
This is my first time.
Oh, excellent.
And I've heard about it from everybody over the years about what a special and unique place it is. So I'm very looking forward.
We are thrilled to have you here. Is there anything that you're looking forward to doing while you're here?
I love to museum. So I'll check out what's there. I know the local craft brewery scene.
Very big here.
Mm-hmm. Eating locally, getting a feel. College towns are always wonderful. They have a wonderful energy about them. And we play a lot of college towns.
True. Well, you'll have to have some of our barbecue.
That's a given.
And breakfast tacos, of course. And for museums, you might want to check out the Bob Bullock Texas History Museum, because Texas, as you could probably guess, has a pretty interesting past.
Yes.
So there.
Thank you for that
there's
one.
There's the offstage and on the air recommendations. Well, Karen Murphy, we are looking so forward to seeing you here.
Everyone who comes will be very happy. And if you're 5, if you're 85, come see us, because that is the width and breadth of our audience. And it's a wonderful, special time, and people often will stop us and wait at the stage door, and it just makes all of us feel good to know that we're this ambassador for a special evening.
Wonderful. I, for one, am really looking forward to seeing it. I wasn't able to see it in New York, so this will be a good opportunity for me to see it for the first time.
Make sure you find me after the show and say hello.
I absolutely will. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Karen Murphy. She's part of the cast of Broadway Across America's Finding Neverland, playing now at the Bass Concert Hall through the 21st of January. For more information, you may visit austin.broadway.com.
Oh, I'm so sorry I did not get to see that. I'm very, very, very disappointed.
Well, you still have a chance. It's here at Bass Concert Hall through Sunday.
Are they really not going to, like, spread people out throughout
the world? No, well, I was getting comps, so anyway. So we have only time to say goodbye. So goodbye.
Au revoir.
Google, abiento. Facebook, Twitter, offstageonair.com, put your name in. Austin Monitor News is next. If you're listening on the radio, stand by for Backstage at Offstage if you're listening on the podcast. And to keep our cold stuff, this is a nice cold morning.
We're going to go freeze by the dumpsters.
From Maggie Flynn.
It's a nice cold morning.
I'm freezing.
A delightful chilly day.
My teeth are chattering.
I can feel
the curtain has just come down on Jesus Christ Superstar, the musical.
Woo!
The story of a hapless young savior. I don't know. Jesus Christ Superstar. The thing is, I just don't know how to love him.
I was just about to go, try not to get worried.
That's all. So back here we have slipped backstage. We're down the stairs. We're next to the dumpsters. We're
auditioning people for Judas right now.
We are auditioning people for Judas. Judas.
Judas.
We're gonna.
It's Judas.
The Judas.
It's a superstar.
We're not gonna do Judas. We're gonna be doing Judas-ish. He's gonna be kind of bad.
Ish.
He's gonna kind of give Jesus up. Anyway, joining us backstage is Christy Moore and Laura Freeman. Hi, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
So this is my favorite kind of backstage, when it's just a few of us. And Christy, I'm surprised we've never had you back here before.
I have never been to the backside, as they say.
There you go. Oddly enough, sorority name in college.
I was just about to go. I think you might have pulled out another sorority name.
So what we like to do here at Backstage is try to figure out how people found their way into show business. How did you find your way into show business? Where did you grow up and all that stuff?
Oh, my.
Who are you?
Who the heck is Christy Moore?
Oh,
we get deep philosophical here.
My mother was an opera singer.
No.
Yeah, not professionally, but she was part of
a... She's a soprano?
She was a mezzo, yeah.
Oh, awesome.
She was part of a grassroots opera company where I grew up in the panhandle of Texas, Amarillo.
Amarillo? Yeah. Are you from Amarillo?
I am from Amarillo.
The worst Mexican food I've ever had was in Amarillo.
Was it really?
Yes.
That's surprising.
In the 80s.
Yeah, that's funny.
Wow.
Oddly enough. Wow, so you grew up in Amarillo.
Anyway, yeah, so I started my parents loved the theater, they loved the symphony, they took us to all of that stuff. I actually saw my first Broadway show when I was 6 years old.
Wow.
And Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh,
we share that.
Herschel Bernardi.
Me too.
Herschel Bernardi, Bette Midler.
Oh, I guess she was in there. Yeah. What year did you see it? I saw it in 69.
I saw it in 1968.
Okay, so that was the very first Broadway show I saw at the Imperial Theater with Herschel Bernardi, who was the third Tevye. Oh my God, we have that in common. Oh. I love that.
That's pretty cool.
Wow. Okay, cool. Sorry.
So anyway, I started out by, being a little dancing girl in operas and things like that and singing in the chorus.
Supernumerary, as they say.
That's right. Mm-hmm. They do say that. And
look at you pulling out your terminology,
that's that world, all right. And really, I was a musician more than anything. A singer, flute, piano, all of that stuff.
Do you still play?
So, how many instruments could you play or can you play?
Well, these days, not very many.
If we got you a flute, could you and Laura do a duet right now?
No.
Okay.
Well, if you got me a kazoo, I could.
I don't know if you saw. I was in this pig pile thing a couple of years ago.
That sounds familiar, but I don't know what.
It was this gigantic thing that was a 3-year-long process to develop this piece by Sybil Kempson, and it was the Roods, and Savage Vanguard, and Fusebox, and Physical Plants.
Oh.
And we did like 2 different iterations of it. Graham wrote the music for it. Graham Reynolds. And he was like, oh, you play the flute. So, and then he wrote a piece for me to play in the middle of a monologue. And I sang in that, had been a very long time since I had dusted off my musical skills at that point. But
who knew? A lot of fun. That's good to know about you. That's cool. I actually didn't know that you were a performer until this very moment, I don't think.
It's a few and far between. Yeah. But
You found your way into directing via performing, like so many people.
Yeah, do. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So I started out as a music major, actually.
Laura, were you also a music major?
No.
You are a musician now. I don't know if you know that.
I am. I was kind of just going to college and ended up with a sociology major, and I was determined not to do music because I didn't think that would be practical.
Little did you know.
What foresight.
I haven't done anything since, so. I haven't done anything but since.
Oh, that's funny.
Did you go to school in Austin, Texas?
No.
Oh, okay. Where did you go to school?
Well, I grew up in College Station, and they told me to go to the university. So I was like, okay, there's one right here. I'll just go to.
Don't say there's no judgment. This is a no judgment zone.
No handy.
So yes, you went to A&M.
I did.
Well, that's cool. And you got a sociology degree.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what school did you go to?
I went to undergrad at Baylor.
Baylor. And did you do grad? Did you go to master's school?
Yeah, I got my MFA from UT.
UT, heard of that. So UT wasn't on that list that we talked about earlier.
That was kind of
no, it wasn't. That was interesting.
Well, yeah, I'm not pleased with the University of Texas School of Theater and Dance right now.
With the
because they cut the musical theater department.
Yeah, no, I understand. I'm on the same page.
No, I'm telling Christy.
Oh.
I know you know.
I'm like, oh yeah, no, I'm with you.
Yeah, so I find that
irresponsible. It wasn't really around very long. It seemed like they were like, oh, Texas State is really getting known for that. We better jump in. And then they were like, oh, we don't want to do that.
You know what? I've never seen, this is off our subject of Backstage at Offstage, but I've never seen a musical at Texas State. I should change that.
Yeah.
I haven't either, have to say. I've never seen anything there.
I've seen one show there. I saw the... there's a show, I forgot what it was called, but it is the show where they read the transcripts from the marriage case. Not the marriage case, because that was too... Prop 9. The California Proposition 9 case.
That was a while ago.
Yeah, that was a while ago. It's been a while. College in, you just told me and I just lost it.
Waco
and Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
Theater department. Do they have a good theater school there?
They do, actually. They have a pretty good musical theater program. Now, they did not have it when I was there. It was a very small department when I was there. And I went there for kind of all the wrong reasons. But I'm glad that I went there. I got a good, very well-rounded education there and met, a mentor that I still... go up there and visit and look to.
Oh, that's awesome.
Mentors are like a second mom. So important.
Pat Cook, super important to me. So, and I met some very dear friends there. So it was a good experience.
So did you go up to school as a performer?
Yeah.
When did you switch?
Half music, half theater thing. And the music people were like, no. And the theater people were like, yeah. And so I was like, okay, I'm all in on the theater.
And then you switched to directing.
Yeah, they actually had an undergraduate focus in directing available even back then, which is pretty rare. And so we did 2 years of directing, and I tried to do both, and I just couldn't. And also I had a talk with my mentor and was like, how do you know if you should be a director or an actor? And she was, are you really invested in like the deep details of acting and, can you live with this person for a long time and blah, blah. And I was like, no, I'm out.
Bye. Thanks for playing.
Yeah. So, and I discovered I had some,
however small talent for directing, so I went that way.
Or however large of talent for directing that you have.
There you go.
And what about you, Laura? When did, so you went, you got your sociology degree. What shifted you back to music?
Oh, I started writing songs at the end of college. Drinking got me back to music. Well, no, but I had a lot of stage fright, and I'd been in one musical in high school. Hello, Dolly.
Oh.
I played the ditzy.
Minnie. Awesome.
Yeah. So, that was my one theater experience in high school and then college. And I was in a band, and then I got out of that band, came back to Austin, and then got in one of my very first shows on theater at the Vortex, and Christy was directing it.
Oh, wow.
So it all comes around.
It does.
An original musical by Kirk Smith.
That's right.
Lucifer.
How was Christy to work with as an actor? Oh. And you can tell the truth.
Well, I had fun. It was interesting because the writer was also a performer in the show.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like it was sort of, and then his wife was, or his not wife at the time. But anyway, it was sort of like having three directors, which I had never done it before. So I was like, oh, this is how shows work. And since then I've been like, oh, okay, there's one person that's usually in charge, but you know, it was
Martin Burke
fun.
Was in that
Martin
show.
Burke.
Wow.
Douglas Taylor.
Yeah.
At Sheila Gordon.
What year was this?
At St. Ed's.
What a fun group. That's a fun
1996.
Oh God. Mm-hmm. Wasn't even born then.
A long time ago.
Yeah. so I'd been
saw Fiddler in the Womb, eh?
Yeah. It was
I did. That's, and as a matter of fact, that's the original name of the play.
Oh God.
Fiddler in the Womb. So what was it that gave you the impetus to be in the show? What were you were sitting there and did you work in sociology?
No. Never did anything useful. I'm a very good temp because I treat it as an acting job. I act like I'm working.
It's funny to hear you say that you have stage fright because I met you when I very first met you. You were in character as Luna Tartt here at the radio station, uh-huh. I think. And you were hilarious and you were having so much fun. And then I remember talking to you afterwards and you were a little iffy on whether you wanted to continue. And I went, are you kidding? But you had such presence in it to hear that person that I spoke to that day say, I'm got stage fright. I wouldn't have believed you because you have so much presence.
Thank you. Yeah. I've done a lot of theater and a lot of writing since 1996.
So you do a lot of music for kids.
I do. Mm-hmm.
And do you, I assume you write your own music?
I write for kids. I have 4 albums worth of material for mm-hmm. children. And let's see, 2 puppet show scripts that I perform and wrote. And then I wrote 2 musicals that were performed at Austin Scottish Rite Theater.
Oh, what were their names?
What musicals?
One was A Long Winter's Night in Texas, about a little girl wishing that it would snow. I'm glad we didn't do that this year.
Like, well, we've already had 3
I got my
rounds.
Wish.
And then one was Susan at the Scottish Rite asked me to adapt the story The Snow Queen to a musical.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I had a lot of fun with that. And
so you got a snow theme going on over here.
I do. I do. And I got to play the Snow Queen, which was really fun. Ice and snow.
Speaking of opera.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, Christy, when you were you singing classically?
Mm-hmm. Or? Yeah, I wanted to be an opera singer. My mother had a gorgeous mezzo voice, which is the only thing I did not inherit from her.
And so I'm guessing you were not a soprano.
Actually,
were you?
No, I mean, you know, they said if you were in your 30s, you might actually end up being a contralto, but it takes a long time for that to happen, you know, when I didn't have that much patience, and I really didn't have
Do you enjoy going to opera now? Do you go to see Lyric at
I
all?
Don't go much. Actually, my very first professional job was in opera. So, I mean, I do love the opera.
Where was that? Where was that?
San Francisco Opera.
Okay.
Oh.
And I stage managed.
Not too shabby
either.
I stage
managed a touring company. Their touring company.
So this would be hard. Do you remember your first opera you saw?
Well,
Because it was part of your life. First, it might be difficult.
The first one I saw was in, which was Faust.
Faust. Laura, do you remember your first opera? Have you seen an opera? Some people haven't. Many people haven't.
I have. But I really, I'm more of a Gilbert and Sullivan girl.
It's operetta. Okay. It's got the
I've
words.
I've done that too.
I saw André Chenet.
Oh, yeah?
Which is the wrong thing to see for
That's
your first
not
opera.
A good starter,
no,
really.
It scared me away.
It has scarred Lisa. She talks about that a lot. And yeah. I was like, that's a bummer.
You need to stay with, start with a good Italian. Yeah, Love Aim or something.
Exactly. Something a little easier. I started with opera 501 when I should have started.
Yeah, that's like going down a Black Diamond opera course kindergarten. The first time on skis.
I stage managed Madame Butterfly on the road for like 6 months.
Wow. On the road?
Yes.
That's
a 60-city tour.
Whoa. That's a lot.
It was a lot of
education.
One
week?
A
one
smart
week?
Amount of
shows?
No. It varied. Yeah. It varied. But it was one nights.
Oh,
God, we had an ICM part of the tour that was orchestra, full orchestra and the whole thing. And then we had a two piano part of the tour that was smaller.
So the orchestra traveled with you or did you pick up?
No, they traveled.
Wow.
Whoa.
That's amazing.
That's a...
So we talk about this on the show as well. One of my pet peeves is current actors being so dependent upon amplification and talking about. And I don't know that this is 100% true because my memory isn't great. But I don't remember when I was on Broadway. I don't think we were mic'd. And I know when I go see opera, they are not mic'd. And they're singing against a full orchestra.
Full orchestra.
Wow. And you can hear them in the back row. Right. So that's great. That's all I want to say about
right.
that.
Right. Well, the orchestra's acoustic, right? So it's
not
amplified.
Yeah, but they're still loud.
Well, right, because of resonance. I mean, you know, it's just a different way of producing sound.
Breath.
But so often, like, and you see this at Zach, and I just saw it at Mary Poppins in high school, that the orchestra is either not even close in proximity to the performers, or in the case of Zach, they're underneath completely enclosed for the most part, and they have to be mic'd in order for the audience
to
hear.
Right, yeah.
So I find that sort of a shame too. But that's just me. Well, thank you guys for coming with us backstage.
Sure.
Thanks, Lisa.
If you were to do an opera tomorrow, what would it be?
I love All in the Night Visitors. I like Menotti. More contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, long dead, but more contemporary. Opera, I'd love to do the console. Right now would be a great time to do that. There's a lot of things I would love to do. I mean, I have to say I still have a fondness for Faust.
Because it was your first.
Yeah, exactly. It was my first.
First.
Yeah.
Well, excellent. Thanks again for joining us backstage and putting up with all the craziness back here by the dumpsters.
Thanks.
Okay, see ya.
Bye.
Here we have a light.
That's it.
Done.